Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Pivotal Community Radio in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for this hour, together with Ann Kinzel.
Welcome. On Local Talk with many of our neighbors, we continue to explore many aspects of our local experience during this time of pandemic. Hopefully, we can contribute to the effort we are all part of to bring meaning and sense to our community's story and our future. Let's start with a COVID count for the heart of Iowa. As of yesterday, Story County's count was 58 tested positive, Boone 34, Marshall 721, Hamilton 10, and Hardin 12. Dallas County is 676, and Polk County reports 2,238 positive tests. Information on deaths by county has been removed from the place where it was formerly available on the state's public health website, so we don't have those numbers. Summertime is the time of recreation and many public events in Ames, the time most of us look forward to. But as summer approaches this year, pandemic conditions force a hard look at public safety and what can be possible. The Ames City Council has scheduled for this decision-making process to occur during their monthly council meeting. Ames Mayor John Halo will be joining us to give us some insight into what we might expect tomorrow night. Also, Daniel Hartwig, head of Iowa's State University's Special Collections and University Archives at the library, will be here later in the hour. ISU's library is recording and preserving stories of Iowa during COVID-19 times. It's something you can be part of or just enjoy listening to. And of course, Anna Banana will be here with us to round out the hour with heart-to-heart messages in the time of COVID.
Before we go to Dennis Hart with the weekly summary of Iowa in the news, here's a quick look at the weather. It got cold last night into the 30s, and there was some frost this morning. I'm thinking about all those lovely lavender and white phlox flowers in the woods right now, wondering if they made it through. Today and tomorrow should remain mostly sunny, but it's crisp out in the high 50s and low 60s. We sowed prairie seeds in the backyard yesterday, so I'm happy to see that rain and thunderstorm are expected on and off for the rest of the week and into the weekend. Temperatures should go up with days in the high 60s and low 70s and nights in the 50s. Now here is Mr. Dennis Hart with the summary of the news.
Thanks very much. I'm pleased to be with you on this Monday evening. As it has for the past many weeks, the coronavirus made the most news around Iowa last week. The statewide death toll from the pandemic kept going up, reaching 271 by this Monday afternoon. And the number of people infected with the coronavirus also rose, reaching nearly 12,400 by today. Governor Kim Reynolds announced this morning that she had tested negative for the coronavirus today, that she will be tested daily, and that she would start following a modified quarantine plan. All this because of her visit last week to the White House in Washington, D.C., where someone who later tested positive for the virus was present during her visit. She also said she will make an announcement tomorrow, Tuesday, about reopening more of the state's economy. Last week, she had announced that additional businesses around the state could reopen this past Friday. Among them, dental services, tanning facilities, drive-in theaters, campgrounds, and others, if they met certain requirements. Schools will stay closed, as will hair salons and barbershops statewide. Restaurants and other businesses in 77 of Iowa's 99 counties have already reopened with limitations. The governor's proclamation would also let schools start classes prior to August 23rd, as long as those days are in addition to the 180 days already required by law. The governor flew to Washington, D.C. last week to meet with President Trump and Vice President Pence and talk about the state's response to the coronavirus pandemic, the virus outbreak at meatpacking plants, and the effects on the food supply. Then this past Friday, Vice President Pence flew to Des Moines to hold quick meetings with religious and agricultural leaders. The vice president's arrival was delayed because his press secretary had just tested positive for the coronavirus and had to disembark from Air Force Two. When the VP arrived, along with Iowa Republican U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, they were greeted by Governor Kim Reynolds. None of them wore masks. Pence and his entourage first traveled to Urbandale's West Kirk Presbyterian Church to meet with faith leaders about reopening their houses of worship after many had been closed in recent months because of the virus. Then the VP traveled to Hy-Vee's headquarters in West Des Moines, where he praised Iowa's response to the coronavirus outbreak. One week ago, Governor Reynolds had written an essay in the Des Moines Register, saying in her words, "The reality is, we can't stop the virus. It will remain in our communities until a vaccine is available. We must learn to live with that without letting it govern our lives." Late last week, she told reporters that Iowans could, again in her words, be proud of how the state is responding to the pandemic. Meanwhile, there was word last week that about 2,000 workers at four Iowa meatpacking plants had tested positive for the coronavirus. Those figures included the Tyson plant in Waterloo, where at least 1,000 workers had tested positive. That plant was closed for a time, but reopened last week with new protective measures. At another Tyson plant, this one in Perry, more than 730 positive cases had been confirmed, 58% of the workers there who were tested. That plant had been temporarily closed last month for deep cleaning. The Tyson plant in Columbus Junction had 221 workers test positive, or 26% of those tested. And at the Iowa Premium Beef plant in Tama, 258 workers tested positive for the coronavirus, which was 39% of those tested. Meanwhile, in response to worker shortages and shutdowns at meatpacking plants, Hy-Vee joined other grocery chains in limiting meat purchases by customers. Hy-Vee said customers would be limited to four packages total of fresh beef, ground beef, pork, and chicken, either alone or in combination. Sam's Club is limiting purchases of poultry, beef, lamb, and pork to one item of each per customer. Costco has also taken measures to limit meat purchases. At the same time, Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller joined other state attorneys general in calling for a federal investigation into suspected price fixing among beef processors. They want to find out if the nation's biggest beef processors are colluding against cattle ranchers and consumers. Cargill, JBS USA, National Beef, and Tyson Foods account for about 80% of food processing in the United States. And the Des Moines Register reported that prices have tumbled for Iowa corn, soybeans, pork, beef, milk, and eggs as a result of the pandemic. And demand for ethanol, which consumes much of Iowa's annual corn crop, has plummeted along with oil consumption because Americans have put the brakes on traveling. An Iowa State University economist said the economic toll could reach $7 billion this year for the state's farmers. Also last week, word that a paramedic in West Des Moines had tested positive for the coronavirus. The paramedic had shown no symptoms and had continued to work until receiving test results. Officials believe the protective gear West Des Moines paramedics now wear when they deal with patients, including goggles, N95 masks, and gloves, prevented patients and colleagues from being exposed to the virus. While all this was going on, word came last week that some coronavirus test samples collected under the Test Iowa program could not be processed because they were potentially damaged, which resulted in incomplete results. Test Iowa is a $26 million program. Also last week, word that more than 24,000 Iowans had filed new unemployment claims. That meant that more than 285,000 jobless claims had been filed in Iowa since the coronavirus forced the shutdown of many businesses around the state. Nationwide, more than 3 million new jobless claims were filed, and the unemployment rate soared to 14.7%. Adding to the jobless misery, an eastern Iowa furniture manufacturer announced it will permanently close a plant and lay off about 200 employees in the state. Flex Steel Industries will close a factory in Dubuque that makes products for the recreational vehicle industry. There was also word last week that Iowa's kindergarten through 12th grade schools would receive nearly $72 million in federal money to cover some of the unexpected costs related to the coronavirus pandemic. The state's 327 school districts will divide up the money if they apply for it by the deadline, which is today, Monday. Meanwhile, word last week that Indianola had canceled this year's bike night season because of the coronavirus. Bike night events typically draw thousands of motorcycle riders and bike fans to Indianola. And the Des Moines Register reported that the fate of many county fairs in Iowa was up in the air because of the virus pandemic. A few of the fairs have already canceled this year's events, but many of the fairs are waiting as long as they can before making decisions about what to do. Canceling a county fair would result in financial losses for their communities. As for the Iowa State Fair, a decision about what will happen there is expected by the middle of next month. And one more note about the coronavirus. Word last week that Iowans had been crowding into state parks on recent weekends, in spite of repeated warnings that interaction with other people could help spread the virus. State parks remained open to daytime visitors, even though their campgrounds, restrooms, and other facilities were closed to help prevent people from gathering. But people have been gathering. There was other news last week, news not associated with the virus. One of the biggest stories, a suspected serial killer had been arrested in Iowa. 58-year-old Clark Perry Baldwin was picked up at his Waterloo home after investigators had linked his DNA with three women who had been murdered in the early 1990s. Baldwin is charged with killing a woman and her unborn fetus in Tennessee and charged in the deaths of two women in Wyoming. In Des Moines last week, a man died of carbon monoxide poisoning because of an issue with a furnace in a garage. Two men had been working on a car inside a garage after fixing a gas furnace in that garage. One of the men was later treated at a hospital for carbon monoxide poisoning and told authorities the other man might also be suffering from it. When firefighters went to the garage, they found the other man dead. Still in Des Moines, a motorcyclist died this past Saturday evening after crashing into an SUV being driven by a 15-year-old unlicensed driver. On the construction beat last week, word that the Varsity Theater in Des Moines would undergo renovation and reopen as the Varsity Cinema. The nonprofit Des Moines Film Society wants to apply for state historic tax credits to renovate the 103-year-old on-screen movie theater in the city's Drake neighborhood. That theater closed 2 years ago. There was also a report last week that an 86-year-old shelter at Drake Park in Des Moines is undergoing renovation to become a year-round events and assembly space. The shelter was originally built in 1934 for use as changing rooms for the nearby pool. It will undergo a $765,000 expansion later this year and reopen as an event space in the summer of 2021. On the political beat last week, word that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is the biggest business lobbying group in the nation, endorsed State Senator Randy Feenstra for the 4th Congressional District Republican primary nomination against incumbent Steve King. King has represented Northwest Iowa in that district since 2002. Feenstra is one of four Republicans challenging King in the upcoming June 2nd primary. And one more note before I go, and it's about a singer. Michael Bublé was supposed to come to Iowa this coming Wednesday for a performance at the Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. But the coronavirus forced him to cancel, as it has forced so many other things to not take place. Well, the good news is he's rescheduled his appearance in Des Moines. It's now set to take place next February 21st. Yes, that's a long time to wait, but better late than never, right? Especially if you like Michael Bublé. And that, my friends, is your summary of quite a week of news indeed from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, happy to have been here with you on this Monday, and already planning my next visit. No, not next February, but this coming Friday, when I'll have word on what's been happening in Ames. In the meantime, stay safe and healthy, and I'll try my best to do the same as we all make our way through this uncertain time.
Rhythm and blues had that baby, and they called it rock and roll. Wah, bah, ba, loo, mah, ba, dah, bah, bah, to the blues. To the east, she's running to the west. She's a girl that I-
Little Richard singing Tutti Frutti in a 1995 concert for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Little Richard died Saturday, May 9th of cancer. The originator of rock and roll, born to a church deacon who sold bootleg moonshine in Georgia. Little Richard died last Saturday, and his revolutionary crossover work as an artist became the point of reference for all rock and rollers who followed, including many artists of the British invasion, most famously the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, who toured with him extensively. You can catch an audio documentary about Little Richard and hear more of his music Tuesday night at 9 p.m. here at 89.1 FM. Okay, thank you, Dennis Hart, for the news summary. And Mayor Hala is here. Welcome, Mayor Hala. It's good to see you again.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is kind of an important night for the city of Ames about public areas and public events. Tell us what's happening.
You're exactly right, Ursula. It's a very important meeting. The staff is asking council for some direction on when to open up a number of the public facilities. The city hall was closed through May 15th, this coming Friday, as well as a number of other public facilities, actually virtually all of them, including the public library. And with the lack of certainty with where we stand with the virus spread and the fact that the governor is allowing local entities to make decisions on a number of these different facilities, council is going to be asked to consider a matrix of how to go through and evaluate that decision, determine whether or not we want to open up City Hall. And one big question is going to be, do we go ahead and open a permanent aquatic center for the summer? And if so, you know, when do we do that? So there's lots of issues. Farmers market's part of that. All parks and recreation programs, certainly a library, skate park. And the, you know, the parks are still open. We have closed play structures. Unfortunately, we need to do that because we're concerned about the number of kids that we're getting on them and the potential for transmission of that virus. And boy, we just have been, you know, reading here recently and seeing recently that we're starting to see some children, albeit, you know, not very many, but even one's too many, you know, that might become infected and or pass away because of that. So it's going to be a very good conversation. Staff has done a phenomenal job of preparing a list of questions for a council to use to help evaluate that process, but they are suggesting a consideration be given to not reopen some facilities for a possibly till July 1st. It also impacts the 4th of July activity, pancake celebration that we always look forward to. It's a big event for the community. Ames Patriotic Council, not City Council, but Ames Patriotic Council has decided to not host the Memorial Day parade and events because it's just too close. We're just still not certain. So I think that it's difficult because our community thrives on activities, whether they're indoor or outdoor, as a group to come together. But there's also council wants to be very careful. And I was, as your listeners may have followed, there's a lot of discussion regarding the farmer's market.
So I had the opportunity to pick up at the farmer's market on Saturday, and I have to say it was very smooth at the curbside pickup. You mentioned the word matrix, and that has a little bit of a load here in Iowa. What are you doing to get data? Who's providing you with data?
The staff is going to be giving us data, but in addition, those who are organizing it are going to be asked a number of questions in terms of what they're going to take. For example, a farmer's market is being asked, how would they implement social distancing? How are they going to make sure they provide, you know, good hygiene? And then also council will have to make some decisions as well, too. It's a mix. It's not just staff or it's not just the general public.
We don't have a health department, clearly, at the city level. So are you getting any public health advice from public health experts on how to proceed?
That's a good question, Ann, and that's something that I'll look further into. And I know that the city staff has been working with partners, which includes Iowa State, Mary Greene Medical Center, McFarland Clinic, and the Story County Public Health has been part and parcel of wiki conversations discussing a number of issues, and that's been for 2.5, 3, 3.5 months. So I'm sure that they're relying on and getting feedback from them as a part of that conversation. But in terms of specifically on each individual facility, I can't answer that question with specificity, but I'm going to look into it and I can get back to you on that one.
What do you see as your options here? Are there any good options? Are they all bad? What's the story?
Well, I think it depends on, it's all probably in the eye of the beholder. We're getting emails from people advocating both ways, and staff makes it clear in the council action form that no matter what decision council makes, there's going to be people that are going to be excited about the opening up of more events, and there's going to be those that are going to be very concerned. I would say that we're probably running right now about 50-50 in terms of those that are advocating for opening up more and allowing more things to occur, and some that are saying, no, we don't want to. Initially, as kind of everyone can appreciate, it was 90-95%, you know, let's shut down, let's make sure things are not opened up. Parks and Recreation did do a survey, and I'm still in the process of reading through all the results, and it was great participation. But over 50% of the people who responded regarding whether or not you open up Furman Aquatic Center, would you come back this summer? The answer was yes. But that has its own challenges. We just can't decide tomorrow night to open up in 2 weeks. It takes at least a month to a month, you know, 5 weeks just to try and hire staff to get the pool up and operational, get the chemicals balanced, get the water to the temperature it needs to be. So that means that even if we did open up the pool, it's going to be at the earliest sometime in early June, maybe even mid-June.
Well, one of the things that's really difficult about COVID-19 as an illness is the 1 to 3 week latency period between the time a person is infected and a time a person becomes ill. And we start counting them when they're ill. So that seems to put on a real additional pressure for you when it comes to making decisions about opening. Because if somebody's exposed today and they don't show anything for 3 weeks, how do you deal with that?
That's correct. Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, and your point, is that even the foremost doctors say, we still don't know enough about this virus, you know, in terms of how does it spread. I think I saw a piece in the New York Times this morning. They're even wondering about our children super carriers. So the point is that there's things that we have to really understand, and the city has no jurisdiction, but, you know, the Ames School Board and the Ames School Administration and all administrations around the state and the nation are going to have to wrestle with, you know, opening of schools in the fall.
It's a hard decision to make. I mean, Ames has worked really hard to become a destination for central Iowa or even central and northern Iowa. You know, if I remember last summer, it was almost impossible to book Main Street anymore and find a weekend when there wasn't a concert happening or a festival. We have so many festivals during the summer, and Ames has really kind of had just become successful at becoming a destination town. So this is a painful decision to make, isn't it? Because there's a lot at stake.
It is. The point is that we're very concerned about all the crowds and social distancing. But to your point, Ursula, you're right. And boy, the hotels have really gotten hammered. They have lost a tremendous amount of money. Just imagine how much money the hotels and restaurants lost just on the weekend of graduation and all the people coming in. But as painful as it is, we also have a responsibility to protect the health and, you know, welfare of the community. And so it's not an easy decision.
Yeah.
You know, and we're trying to work with and trying to follow also what the governor's recommendations are as well, too. Now, right now, we couldn't even open the pool if we wanted to because she has not allowed that to happen, nor the skate park.
Although the skate park, I noticed this weekend, was quite full.
Yes, to that point. Right now, the process is that if someone were to see, let's say, the skate park, we would ask Parks and Recreation Department to go out and encourage people not congregate together. If they would blow that off, then we start going up, you know, to the police. But we're trying to avoid becoming a militant state.
Right.
We're trying to encourage people and appeal to them to be self-policing.
Mayor Hala, this is a lot of responsibility for each city. Do you know, are other cities making similar decisions? Have you been in communication with the other cities in central Iowa?
Yes. In fact, every week through Story County Emergency Management, virtually all the Story County mayors get online on Thursday nights, and we talk about these challenging, you know, decisions. And also through a mayor's group, Iowa League of Cities dialogue, every city is wrestling with it. Some have decided to open libraries partially by just on an appointment type basis, but that's a lot of smaller communities versus a larger community. City halls is also another issue.
You know, I have a vision question for you. I'm curious, as the mayor, what you're thinking these days. I mean, the numbers in Iowa are still going up, so we don't think that we've really peaked yet, and we could be still entering into a very dangerous time. This is going to be like this for a significant amount of time, long enough so that it really, really significantly alter how we run as a community, because so much of our culture is predicated on people gathering. People can't gather anymore. So I'm wondering, as you look at this as the mayor, what are your thoughts in terms of envisioning where we go from here? What is the new way for our town to keep its morale and momentum up? Do you have thoughts about where we go from here?
I think, first of all, is to be use careful and wise judgment to follow CDC the governor and other health professionals, you know, recommendations. Businesses can only stay closed for so long before they're all of a sudden going to have, you know, difficulty coming back from that. From the standpoint of vision, but these are unprecedented times. We just have not gone down or through this path before. And so I think having a positive attitude, working together with business organizations, other government organizations, Iowa State University, and communicating. I mean, it's all, and we are a company town. That's the other thing, is that we really hope, we really want to see the students come back. They bring a vibrancy to our community. They're almost half of our community, if not, you know, over half of our community. And they are committed at this point in time to come back this fall. That's going to be a critical piece. But right now, it's more or less, it's taking it week by week and evaluating where we're at. And as you, to your point, while cases keep going up, the number of people who are hospitalized is very, very small. And that's one thing that the governor is looking at, and that is an encouraging fact for Story County.
Well, thank you, Mayor Hala. We really appreciate you coming. And
you're going to be making decisions tomorrow night, but the terrain is changing underneath you. If those decisions change, what's the best way for citizens to stay in the know on that?
We're endeavoring to keep our website up to date, and in terms of communicating decisions. I know that our public information officer, Susan Guiazda, works very hard to release information via press releases, Facebook, and sort of the website, and also through print, and also through radio.
And you can hear the city council.
Do you know any good radio station?
You bet.
Pardon me?
You can hear the city council meeting as well, right?
That's correct. We are still on Zoom. We'll probably stay on Zoom for a little while. You can, if people go to the cityofames.org website and just go over and find, you know, the government tab, go down to the mayors and city council, you'll find a meeting link. If you click on the agenda under that, there's a hot link that goes to the Zoom meeting. There's also, we're still going to be on Channel 12 live. We're also on a YouTube page as well. So there are various ways to view it. And or it's also taped and archived as well.
And what time is the meeting?
It starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow night.
Okay, 6 o'clock tomorrow night, Tuesday the 12th.
Yep, and the item that we're talking about is one of the last items on the agenda. But some of the items on the agenda will be going pretty quickly. There's a couple that are going to be taking some time. But the point is, it's not going to be the first thing out of the chute.
Okay, and again, what will be discussed is the future of public events and public facilities in Ames for this summer. Thank you so much, Mayor Hala.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ready, set, go, man, go. I got gas that I love, so I'm ready.
Going to the corner, pick up my sweetie pie. She's the rock and roll baby. She's the apple of my eye. I'm ready, 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 ready to rock and roll. All the flat top cats now dungaree dolls are headed for the gym to the soccer ball. The drums are really jumping, the cats are going wild. The music really set my dear the quick style. I'm ready, 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 ready.
Little Richard again with Ready Teddy. And this is Local Talk on KHOI COVID Response Pivotal Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Ann Kinzel. The ISU Library is asking, are you ready to share your COVID-19 story? They are ready to capture what they call the reality of a global pandemic through the lens of every Iowan. Daniel Hartwig is head of Iowa State University Special Collections and University Archives. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you.
So what exactly is the COVID-19 Stories Project?
Thank you for asking. So this is truly a unique time in our history, world history to be exact. And history is often written based on resources available to historians in archives, libraries, and museums. And a lot of that history is often told by those in power or through administrative records, political records, etc. But what is often not in archives or in history are the tales of individuals, of persons, particularly those from unprivileged backgrounds or who don't often get interviewed or have their stories told. So as a result, we're reaching out to Iowans who are in need or facing real challenges to share their experiences, to record their experiences, and to share those with us so that in the future, when history is written about this global pandemic, their stories will be used, their stories will be understood, and hopefully we will learn from those stories.
Well, so it's really a project of the moment. It's with awareness of the importance of the moment we're going through right now.
Exactly. You know, originally, since I was a little behind other states in terms of the number of cases and the impact it's having within the state, we initially set out to provide some work for our students and our staff who had been sent home, but we quickly realized that this was a much bigger event, and we really wanted to capture more voices than just those of our student workers and or our staff. And so we wanted to capture the stories of those throughout the state and those throughout the university. And so we've kicked off a number of smaller projects, so one documenting the ISU experience, a second documenting agricultural and rural stories, and then a third is chronicling race and diversity during the pandemic. And we're in touch with a number of professors and a number of communities, and so we anticipate more projects to fine-tune additional stories to document individual narratives throughout the pandemic.
So how exactly are you locating the people to tell their, so basically, well, before I ask you that question, what exactly happens?
Sure. So people can, they can, keep a traditional journal, or diary. They can record audio or video. They can do a photo essay. They can create a creative art piece. So we're really not presenting limits in terms of their expression. We want individuals to share their experience however they best, see fit or however they think will be most impactful. And so individuals can either, share with us original physical materials, or they can upload materials on a website that we're providing for people to share their stories in either a one-time or an ongoing basis.
And I'm curious, when you say that you want the stories of a diverse range of people, some of the most affected people are either very elderly or they're members of immigrant communities who are traditionally difficult to reach. How do you get their voices into the mix?
Excellent question. And so we've just started in doing outreach, and so we're working with our communications team and then various professionals with expertise throughout the university to help us network. And so we're reaching out to various groups to share our release and to get information about the project. And so this is our first week. And so if individuals, you know, have contacts or ideas, we're certainly open to ideas on how to share our story and get it into these communities where it is very difficult. So you mentioned, you know, nursing homes especially, which are, you know, highly impacted. So it's very scary. So whether it be, you know, newsletters or emails or contacting, you know, directors, we're building out that network to try to build those relations. And then the challenge, though, being is making sure that those individuals can, you know, capture, record their stories. So another thing that we're thinking of adding would be like a Google Voice number where people can call in and share a short story with us. So again, we're trying not to limit individuals technologically so that they can share their stories wherever they are.
Well, we have a recording of one of the stories you've collected so far, and I wanted to share with you just an excerpt of what Daniel shared with us. This is a recording that was made by an ISU student, so this would fall under the ISU stories. And the person that you recorded, you probably recorded over by internet, I think. It sounds like a recording made by a computer.
And so we're using Zoom.
You're using Zoom. Okay, great. And this is Blake Lineweaver, and he's an ISU student from Lake Okoboji, from a small town in the vicinity of Lake Okoboji, I think. And these are just a few excerpts of his reflections on his experience of this moment, both as an ISU. I think he said that he was actually just on the verge of going to Costa Rica for a project, and then his Costa Rica plan was canceled. First, he thought it wouldn't affect the trip at all, and then all of a sudden, everything changed. And he describes his reflections on what it's like to experience that as a student and also as the resident of a small town.
It went from just being, don't leave the state, to don't leave your house. And it was so fast and such a turn that it seems almost like word vomit right now, trying to go back and look upon those emotions, but it was such a fast turnaround where it was just ignorance and upset, and then it was like, this is really happening, and pain not only for myself but also the understanding that this is a lot of pain for other people. Others are also having their plans just be completely changed by this. And now, at this point in the game, it's not at all about me anymore. This is a collective societal thing that we're experiencing. And it's not just here in Iowa, here in Ames. It's across the world. This is a global experience that we're feeling together. It's a collective grief. I think I read another article in the New York Times, I think, about the sense of collective grief that we're all in this utter loss, that it does feel like a funeral in some regard of the life that we used to know is dead, and we're being rebirthed in some ways, but constantly, like every day is like a new normal. You have to redefine it for yourselves.
That must be really difficult for somebody or someone who's self-admitted is a big planner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard. Like I love constancy and just things that are predictable and have structure, and there's zero structure to anything right now. You look to folks for answers and who does have the plan for what's next, and evidently no one does. At least that's what the sources seem to say. Dickinson County had one reported case. It was a classmate from high school. She went to a private university a few hours northeast from Iowa State. She didn't end up going home, but it was something that I had learned about from my mother, actually. It's such a small rural community. Dickinson County had one reported case at the time. And my mother is also she's very in tune with public health and sometimes borderline anxious. And so she had reached out to me of like, do you know so-and-so who has this? And it's like borderline intrusive to other folks' life that in some of these communities, they know who gets it. Like if they share to one person, it immediately spreads to everyone else of like, this person has it, who has been in contact with them. They're trying to do this whole contact tracing of jumping along all the lines. Yeah, it felt, wow, I guess she's young. So I'm hopeful that at least this doesn't affect her individually, but I can only imagine what this means to her mental health, because she didn't really want it to get out to a lot of other folks.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Blake. You know, a lot of the national news has been so focused on, you know, New York City or Los Angeles or Chicago, but a largely rural state like Iowa, finding out that someone in a really small community has tested positive can really kind of shine a real negative light on that person.
Yeah, for sure. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that one too, about sometimes with how these cases are being reported to us through, I listen to Iowa Public Radio for my daily updates with it, if I do decide to follow them for that day, they all come back as numbers. Like, we have this reported case in Clay County, or this case in Polk, and this one in Johnson, or these are the daily death tolls in some of these counties. And yeah, it just, it all looks like numbers. And I think sometimes we neglect the fact that these are humans, and they're literal people with life histories and so many other connections, that like the pain that they feel to both have this, of like the uncertainty of what, how am I going to be affected by this novel coronavirus? People are experiencing a variety of different symptoms. And so there's such a gravity to that, that like, I think I can find myself being numbed to the fact like, oh, there's been 500 new cases across the state of Iowa today. It doesn't hit with the same gravity as it, one friend that I knew from high school getting it. Like, that was so much more dramatic.
And that is Blake Lineweaver, a ISU student who I think still is in Ames, actually, living in an apartment. He is from a town near Okoboji, talking about a lot of the thoughts and trying to wrap his brain around what's happening, like the rest of us are, and articulate some of those feelings. We're speaking with Daniel Hartwig, who's head of Iowa State University Special Collections and University Archives, and they're doing a project, I think just called the COVID-19 Stories Project, and they're collecting the testimonials and also other ways of people recording this historic moment of the hard impact of the COVID-19 crisis. Daniel, have you found that the listening to these people's stories, does it affect you? Does it help you understand better what we're all experiencing?
Absolutely. And that's one of the, you know, real goals of an archives, is to capture these personal individual narratives. Again, so much of what we read about history is often told from privileged perspectives, but often it's lacking in terms of how it affects individuals. So, you know, we can read a lot about what it's like to farm, or what farming was like, or read about agricultural history, but we don't have a lot of the personal narratives. What it was actually like to be a farmer, what it's like to, you know, to grow up in Iowa, or in our particular case, what's it like to live through a pandemic? What's it like to deal with a family member who's sick or ill? And so this project is to capture those stories so that people can listen firsthand to those stories and to understand what it's like. And hopefully, you know, to have empathy and to realize that, you know, we can do better and that we should do better, and that hopefully it's a call to change and it's a call to action.
Daniel, this is the second pandemic that Iowa State has gone through. Were there any archives from the 1918 pandemic that have helped you in your work?
We're going through our collections, and so on our COVID-19 Stories webpage, you'll see a photograph from the 1918 flu epidemic of a hall, you know, filled with patients. So we have, you know, some small collections that we're reviewing and digitizing. And actually, in Blake's interview, you heard Mark Barron. So Mark Barron works with Extension and now with the library, and has taught before at Iowa State. But he did an exhibit, I think 2 years ago, on the 19 epidemic. And so we're going to work with Mark to make those materials available online. So he worked with students to review that epidemic, and they created a small exhibit on that. So yes, we do have a small collection that we're working to make available. What we probably don't realize is, I think during the 1918 outbreak, I think over 20 students, you know, died at Iowa State. And so, you know, it's a very severe. Yes, we hope to make those materials available so that individuals can, you know, see how the university responded and learn from that experience.
Well, that photo is very, very famous. I first saw it before I ever heard about Ames in a health law class many years ago. So let's hope we're not as infamous next time.
Exactly. So,
Daniel, where can somebody hear these things or see these things?
So from our website, so you can just Google Iowa State Special Collections.
Okay.
And so on our front page, we have a, you know, a short information about the project and then a link to a fuller description. And on that fuller page, you can find information about each of the sub-projects, instructions on how to participate, even some prompts if you're, you know, having trouble writing. The Writing and Media Center at Iowa State has graciously volunteered to help individuals share their narrative. So if you need help writing or want someone to review what you've written, the Writing and Media Center is helping out.
Okay.
Also have links on how to submit or how to sign up for an oral history.
Fantastic. And we'll put a link to that on our website, but it's also just Google Iowa State Archives.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you so much, Daniel Hartwig. Really appreciate you joining us, and thank you for this fantastic project. And we look forward to airing more of the stories on KHOI as they emerge. We'll download some and air them as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
Okay. You too. Take care. Anna Banana, are you there?
Yep. Anna Banana Bread's in the house.
Hello, Anna Banana Bread. What do you got for us today?
Well, again, together we are flattening the curve, but building up our community with these heart-to-heart messages brought to you by KHOI to keep us connected to love, comfort, and each other during this time of social distancing. So the first heart-to-heart message is a shout-out from Jim Cushing in Des Moines. Jim encourages everyone to hang in there, and take one day at a time. We'll get through this. Jim is de-stressing by watching local musicians live stream performances on Facebook and Des Moines Live TV. He wants us to support our local talent, and he recommends B2ins, wow, that's a mouthful, Brazilian Twins on Facebook, and live on at 5 p.m. on Sundays, or NOSI with Max Wellman on Facebook Live Friday and Saturday evenings. So Jim's message made me think about how important music is in our lives. And I read an article in Psychology Today about music, and the article starts with this: music has the ability to evoke powerful emotional responses such as chills and thrills in listeners. Listening to music is an easy way to alter mood or relieve stress. And people use music in their everyday lives to regulate, enhance, and diminish undesirable emotional states such as stress and fatigue. And so this weekend, as we all receive the sad news about Little Richard dying on Saturday, and this morning, Dennis Hart's news that Michael Bublé won't be coming until February of next year, we talk about mood-altering music and thinking about how music shapes our lives, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. So I was feeling quite cranky on Sunday, I'm not going to lie. And so I decided to go listen to Tutti Frutti, as you played this morning on KHOY. And how can you stay cranky when you listen to Tutti Frutti or you watch Little Richard play? So I was up dancing in my apartment and much happier. So indeed, music does relieve stress even during the time of COVID-19. So again, during this time of COVID-19 and KHOY, it made me wonder about how we are incorporating music into our lives to reduce stress. And in honor of this influential rock and roll pioneer and legend, and Jim's heart-to-heart message, and KHOY's passion for great music, as we at KHOY host the Pantorium Sessions, which are live music performance, and I believe Mike Murphy is also hosting a show that has music to help us get through this coronavirus funk. And so last Friday, I did an interactive heart-to-heart message, and I really liked it. So I'm going to ask everyone how they're using, at Local Talk, music to get them out of the coronavirus funk. So let's start with Mike Murphy. So you're doing this music show, or am I mistaken?
No, that's right. You're right on. You hit the nail on the head.
That's good. And so what music? I saw on your Facebook you have some interesting music that you've been posting. So what's your favorite band that you like to listen to these days?
Well, I always like the Grateful Dead, and you can't go wrong with with tried and true favorites like the Beatles. But, you know, something of a more recent issue that I really love is a band called The Baseball Project. And all they do is songs about baseball, but they're all very clever and they're all, you know, become larger than baseball. They become philosophical in a lot of cases, and but they're just a great band, The Baseball Project.
Well, so they hit a home run. Da-da-da-da. So, Ursula, what are you listening to these days?
Well, let me see. I listen to a lot of things, but maybe I'll tune into the fact that last Friday, our operations manager, who also has a great show called the KHY Jukebox, he played Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. He was doing a disco session. And I lowered my inhibitions. We have a big empty station here right now because we don't allow people to come to the station. So we have this big, beautiful room in the Pantorium, which is usually full of lots of people and parties and concerts and, you know, lots of people creating stuff together. Right now it's a big empty space. So I just kind of, you know, tried to forget the fact that Eric could see me through the big window. And I just had a great disco dance session to I Will Survive. It was.
I love that. So, Anne, what are you boogieing down to get you through the coronavirus funk?
Okay, so I confess I have another radio station love, Jazz 90.1 FM out of Toronto, pretty much the only all jazz station in North America all the time, commercial free. And so I listen to that and kind of just chill out to jazz. And then for my daily workout, I try to put on something pretty raucous to get me going. You know, motivation to work out isn't easy in these times, so music really does help. So it's jazz to chill and anything loud to work out to.
I love that. So listen to how music at KHOI, the local talk team, who knew they're so funky, cool, and awesome, doing boogie dances in the studio, at home, or on the radio airwaves.
Well, thanks for asking, Ms. Banana.
So if you would like to respond to any of these messages or tell us how you're listening to, I invite you to call or text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. So let's all boogie out there and keep us optimistic as we're dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic. And from the bottom of our hearts, KHOI and Anna Banana, thank you for listening, and we send out our love to each of you today.
Thank you, Anna Banana. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Ann Kinzel. Thank you for listening. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. here at KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of the show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Remember, we are streaming live at khoifm.org, so tell your families on the other side of the continent. They can stay in touch with Ames, Iowa, and Central Iowa, not just Ames, but all of Central Iowa. Ann, can you finish us off here?
Sure. Closing out our COVID-19 Pivot Response show, as always, is our song Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We'll also heard Tutti Frutti and Ready Teddy by the late, great Little Richard, leaving this world last Saturday, having forever changed the way the world sounds. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening and supporting the station, and we'll see you again on the radio.
The jumps are really jumping, the cats are going wild. The music really fit my dear, the queen style.